This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show, or podcast, number 167 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording shares the Joint Budget Subcommittee meeting held on Wednesday, June 19, 2019. The Joint Committee is comprised of members of the Town Council, School Committee, and Finance Committee, and supported by members of the Town Administration as well as the Central School District Central Office. The major news from this one is plans have started for an override to be put before the voters for the FY 2021 budget. The specific amount and details remain to be finalized. The timing of the override vote also remains to be determined. The agenda document is linked in the show notes, along with my notes from the meeting. So without further ado, here is the audio recording, approximately 90 minutes.
Audio recording this meeting.
That is correct. Thank you, sir.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Jinder, if you could, Jamie, could you please give us an update or overview of where we're at this point, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks everybody for attending tonight's meeting. So as everybody likely got, I handed out packets. I put them at the seats, just some extra copies down the end, and I'll walk folks through some of the materials here. So the first thing is, attached to the agenda, I did update the five-year fiscal forecast. Not a tremendous amount in this document changed from the fiscal forecast earlier, other than some basic narrative points. But I felt obligated to, while we had the opportunity, it was another opportunity to basically put out the fiscal forecast so that it would be posted on Franklin Matters, on the town website, and go out to our email distribution list. It was just another opportunity to help get out the message of the financial situation the town is in. I'm not going to walk through all of that because we did it during the budget hearings this year and at the FinCon meeting. But if folks look into their second part of their packet, there's a one-page sheet chart. And really what this is probably one of the more important things we'll go through this evening. So. I have a spreadsheet that is extremely big and large and deep that models out the actual numbers that are in the fiscal forecast. And what we have here is what I tried to do is condense it down onto one page so folks could really see what some of the cost drivers were, what the general numbers were over the next 5 years. And happy to answer questions on this, by the way, obviously. FY20, as everybody knows, I appreciate the support of the school committee and the council and the FinCom to get through this tough budget year. As we all know, we made some reductions that are going to certainly be challenges that we're going to have to face in the upcoming years, but we were able to get through this year without any layoffs on the town side. I know the school had some reductions. But if you look at FY21, I'm going to point you to a couple things. Obviously, down the bottom in red is the bad numbers of $4.3 million of the deficit that we're looking at based on current trends. And I want to explain some of the assumptions that go into this number. Number one, if you look at the education line item, the Franklin Public School District, I separated out the overall number for what Franklin is for the Franklin District and separated out the Aggie and Tri-County into a different line item, which is the $2.6 million. But as you see there, the 67.8 is actually about a 5% or $3 million increase, which was a lot closer to what the schools had asked for in their critical needs assessment this year. We weren't able to achieve that. But that's an indication of where we want to be, I think, more optimally going into the next several years. And I think that's really what the school department has identified as really where they're, what the optimum number or closer to the optimum number is of their increase. So. That's a $3 million increase right there. If you look down one more line on the public works, you'll notice the difference between FY20 and FY21 of about $800,000. The vast majority of that, I include back in this number, the $700,000 in roads money that was not included in this year's budget, okay? That also includes in there, across department-wide, a 2% increase for cost of living adjustment for salaries in each line item, as well as a 2% increase in expenses. So those are some of the assumptions that go into this. If you look down a couple more into debt service, expenses, you'll notice that that's about a million dollar increase, approximately. It's a little bit less, but I'm baking that into this model mainly because our debt service line item has gone far below where the town policy is. The town policy aims at about 3.5% of the town budget. We're now at about 2.5%. So what we've discussed is possibly in the future, you know, we know from the capital plan, the municipal building needs some improvements with windows. We know that right around the corner, not too far in the distant future, the schools are gonna need some additional roofs for a few of the schools, some boilers, and some other facilities related stuff. And I think it's advantageous to build in at least some extra room into the budget for that stuff so that the town can keep up with its capital maintenance program on its facilities and fields and whatnot. Through the rest of this, health insurance is about another $900,000 increase in there. If you go down one more line item, that's assuming a 6% increase in health insurance. As everybody in the room has heard, and for the folks that will listen to Steve's audio later, we've been very fortunate through the Insurance Advisory Committee and the work of the employees. It's really hard work, but everybody puts in the time and effort. We have been able and successful to bend that trend of what a lot of towns and entities are seeing of 10, 11, 12, 14, 15%. As I mentioned at the budget hearing or at some point, we saw triple the amount of folks, employees this year, take the qualified high deductible plan, which saves the town money. We reinvest a lot of that back into our health savings account for the employees. It's a complete no-brainer for new employees, but certainly for a lot of the veterans that have been around in the town for a while, sometimes it may not add up for their family. That's okay, but at least having those options has allowed us to be able to save a lot of money both on the school side and on the town side, on the municipal side. So that's been productive, but I still think we have to go into any future year assuming that there's going to be a year where that may not be able to occur. And so we do build into this model a 6% increase for benefits. Additionally, in that is a 10% assumption for pension assessment. That's been around the general number that we've seen year after year for the town's pension assessment for Norfolk County. So that's another assumption. And that also bakes in another assumption where OPEB is part of the town policy. We increase the appropriation in the operating budget every year, $50,000. I can't stress the importance of maintaining that investment. Sure, we want to get closer to our OPEB obligation. Nobody's saying that. That's important. But equally as important is that the bond rating agencies see that as an incredibly important factor when giving us really good bonding and interest rates on our borrowing and financials. So as folks recall this year, the S&P bond rating assessment that we had for the library was very strong. And at the end, folks remember there was this clause saying essentially your ability to continue to raise revenue is going to keep that bond rating at the place it's at. If the town is in a position where we're not able to raise revenue, you know, it's kind of the Wild West. We don't know what that bond rating will look like. And that ultimately is going to have a significant impact financially for the town in the name of interest in our budget. So you can either be proactive and stay ahead of it, which actually is cost effective, or we can fall behind and it's just going to drain away from the service levels in the rest of the budget here, because we'll obviously have to pay that interest and take that money from somewhere else in the budget. That is basically the general side that I have for most of the assumptions built in this model. I think as people look out, if you look down at that number of deficits, I understand that there's shock value with those numbers. It's not intended to be definite numbers. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. There's no town manager or superintendent that can magically figure out exactly the dollar 5 years out. But when you look at trends and build in the assumptions that I just suggested, and you continue those year after year, that's where the numbers look like they're generally going. So I think the, as I just mentioned a minute ago, the S&P bond rating, I think that conclusion at the end of that statement really suggested something to us in terms of the ability to raise revenue. I also want to make one last point on FY21 and 22. These numbers do not include, at least for the municipal side of things, I think that the round numbers that I have in here, I would also say for the schools, this does not necessarily include the outcomes of the collective bargaining negotiations of the town, that, you know, the municipal side have been currently negotiating. We're not done with our agreements. We still have a little ways to go. But I have not baked in any numbers into this model.
So you can, nothing.
There's nothing in this model, that 4.3 number that includes collective bargaining numbers. As all of you know, and everybody's well aware, we've had very productive conversations with the unions. And, you know, I don't expect the overall cost to blossom that much deeper out of this number. But, you know, you add another $200,000 or $300,000 here among, you know, on our side, 8 or 9 groups, you know, that number instead of 4.3 could be 4.6 or 4.5. So, again, this is just a snapshot in time. We understand, you know, over the end of the summer and moving into the fall, you know, we'll start building the budget on our side for FY21 and start getting into the meat of this. But that's kind of just the lay of the land and the assumptions that we're using. For the revenue side of things, you know, I'm not a market economics speculator. You know, we've been very fortunate. I think that the economy has been as positive as it has Massachusetts-wide for some years now. And all of these numbers, it's incredibly important to note, 70%+ of our revenue is off property taxes. And, you know, at the end of the day, if housing values dip, at some point, you know, there's lost revenue in the pot. So that's one thing that I wanted to point out. I don't know when the market will slow. I really don't hope it does. But if you're at least wise to assume what goes up must come down at some point, you know, it could be 5 years from now, could be a year from now, could be 3, I don't know. But it's a factor to consider on the revenue side. It's important that everybody in the community in here tonight understands that. While things are going reasonably well. Relative to the charter school, you know, consistently for many years, the town of Franklin was having about 3.7 to 3.9 out of its state aid diverted over to the charter school. This year, as it currently stands, is $5 million approximately. The Senate budget and House are in conference committee. The Senate and the House have dramatically different proposals. Superintendent and I did write a letter right after the Senate budget came out supporting the Senate proposal, which would allow the town, I believe, it's about an $800,000 difference. So the Senate proposal is clearly, without question, much better for the town of Franklin than the House proposal. And we made that position about as clear as we could to our legislative delegation a few weeks ago. I think at the end of the day, we've tried to kick around some numbers, you know, in future years, as you look out 5 years, I think at some point there will be a quote-unquote new normal, where maybe it's 5.5 million, 5.6, if current state law holds, you could be in that range of money every year. From there on out, maybe 5.8 tops. You know, we don't know how it'll all mature out, whether or not students from other towns will come into the charter school, whether when they get into the new building, what happens. But, you know, kind of like what the town saw 20 years ago, there was a big impact right off the bat, and then it kind of slowly ticked up year after year, a couple hundred thousand here or there, and then it finally leveled off to basically what I, again, said will ultimately be the new normal at some point. I'm going to let, there's a couple other quick points I want to make. In terms of the hotel tax and the financial policies and some of the other revenue streams that we have in town, we did revise the financial policies earlier this year. I think that we've had them reviewed by our financial consultants, and we have gone through the finance committee, the town council approved them. I think the policies are in a really strong place. And the last point I would make, and I'm going to, if you're okay, Mr. Chairman, just take it over to the superintendent for a minute, too.
That's fine.
In terms of Chapter 70, you know, in terms of state aid, I said it in the article that was in the Metro West Daily News a few weeks ago. You know, at this point in time, and I know the superintendent has a little bit more intel on this, but I don't see state aid at any time soon drastically going up. In fact, despite what the newspapers say, education reform went in 1993, as most folks know, and there was a change in the Chapter 70 formula in the mid-2000s and created what is really referred to as an aggregate wealth model. And I think one of the things that Franklin is seeing is the fact that Franklin's land values and median income are rising. That is one of the small, one of the factors, not the only, but one of the factors in terms of why Franklin's state aid has leveled off. And so I know there's been a debate on education reform. We've certainly heard it a few weeks ago when the legislators were here. We've been reading about it in the newspapers. It feels like to me a lot of folks are in different solar systems up there. I have no idea if anything's going to happen. And you know, you can just tell from the news articles that there's a very big divide about what to do. So if I can, maybe the superintendent might be able to add some additional comments.
That's fine. Please go ahead.
Sure. I prepared the simple spreadsheet to highlight a few numbers, and Jamie set the stage, I think, really well. Jamie set the stage really well in terms of this conversation related to Chapter 70, and we ran a few figures to project out based on some of the simulations and proposals that are out there related to revising the foundation budget. The foundation budget has been under review in four main areas related to healthcare, special education, the cost of educating English learners, and low socioeconomic students. And these figures are projections that came from Mass Budget this week, and we did some calculations related to implications locally here in Franklin. So the first line takes a look at FY19 and the current foundation budget, which is what the state sets as being adequate for a public education. We spend more than this. Most communities do spend more than this, but this is what the state is saying provides for an adequate education. Moving across is our Chapter 70 for FY19. What makes up the difference is our local contribution. The local contribution is about 51% of our foundation budget. They've projected out to FY26. It's going to take a number of years for these proposals to fully mature, should they move forward. So it's a stepwise plan. Under the status quo, the projection would be an increase to our foundation budget to the tune of $60.7 million. The Baker proposal would increase our foundation budget just over $65 million. And the Promise Act, which is another one of the proposals, would increase the foundation budget over just over $66 million. The next column over looks at the difference between the Baker and the Promise Act as compared to status quo. So you can see that the legislator is making a statement with respect to the foundation budget is not adequately supporting education, particularly in those four areas. The Chapter 70 projected amounts are in the following column, and each represent about $1 million to $1.5 million of an increase over our current Chapter 70. And you can see that the Promise Act would provide for $480,000 more in Chapter 70 over status quo, whereas the Baker proposal would be $180 more than status quo. So that's the information that was put out by Mass Budget. Kind of the rest of that equation would then say, what does that mean for the local contribution? And the local contribution is what is in the final four columns, and increasing the local contribution would, I think that's where we see the biggest implication or expectations related to the foundation budget. So the local contributions under status quo would be $31.5 million roughly. Under the Baker proposal, it would be $35.8 million, and under the Promise Act, $36.3. You can see in both of those proposals that increases the percentage of the local contribution compared to what Chapter 70 would kick in to support the foundation budget. And the dollar amounts are in the final two columns and represents, for Baker's proposal, a $4.4 million increase over status quo, and for the Promise Act, a $4.9 million increase over status quo. So that projects it out to FY26, but I think these numbers give an indication of kind of what's happening at the state level with respect to the legislators' consideration of the foundation budget and Chapter 70 as it relates to Franklin, where there's a higher percentage in those proposals coming from a local contribution. So I wanted to share that with this group, because I think there's been a lot of talk about the foundation budget formula and fixes to the foundation budget and reform, but this gives us an indication of what that would mean more locally. And right now they're proposals, they're not set in stone, but it's what's out there.
Thanks, Sarah. I think before I get to the rest of the stuff that I have in the packet, this might be a good time to maybe entertain questions just about the numbers that we threw out there, in case anybody had any questions.
And you had said road money. How much was put in there?
So in this number in FY21,
it'll
be $700,000. Now, it looks like this. Right, the 700 that we took out. It was actually 600 we took out this year, but we assumed another 100 because it's a $40 million backlog. I know that the number here shows a difference of 800 and change. That's because we assume on the non-roads money, we would assume a 2% increase in expenses into this model. So, you know, some expenses don't go up, some go up a little bit more, but we just generally run, just to model things out until we get to the budget development, we assume 2%. But that $700,000 that would be in there in that 21 model.
Thank you. Any questions, Tom?
Just a quick one. I'm sure we probably don't. We have some of the answers, but not all. As far as the collective bargaining, what are we looking at for? What are you thinking we're looking at for the time?
I'm sincerely hoping that by the end of the summer would be a great goal, is that I could come back to the council in August with maybe July, or our meeting in July is a little late, but I know the 4th kind of laps over a week or two. But you know, I think that the 24th of July might be a little early given the quantity of units that I'm working with. But I would think that in August, I would hope that at least we'd be able to have a discussion in the executive session about where we're all at with, you know, hopefully solvable, a good discussion.
And to the same question, time frame on the school side?
So I think...
And I hate to use that phrase, and I swear I never will.
So hard not.
So hard not.
I think we're in a little bit of the same boat. We... reached an agreement with the teachers unit. The smaller units have been negotiating. We are in the summer, so there's a little bit of a pause.
Yeah.
But I would think, you know, when we get back in the fall in August, we should be in a good spot with those.
I just think it'll give us a much clearer
Absolutely.
Picture as to what we're looking at now and what we may or may not be looking at going forward, which might be a question mark as well.
Yeah, it is. You know,
and that's the part that concerns me a little bit as to how to broach that to the public.
Yeah.
But that's not easy. That's not easy to answer that piece of it.
Of what the number is, or what the
future number is.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
So. That kind of puts us, if we're looking at what we've talked about, I think it's difficult to explain. Nothing.
And in earnest, I'm not, you know, telling anything I shouldn't. I mean, that's, conceptually in my head, I've tried to explain this to most of the units. That's why I kind of want to take the summer months to hopefully wrap that up while we have a little extra time out of the normal business to, you know, by the time you get to Labor Day, you know, you'd love to see at least, you know, agreements in principle, or everyone agrees. We all know you have to go back and do formal votes, but maybe folks are on vacation or whatnot, or, you know, coming back from the summer, you know, but at least have a good framework where I know, and I think the schools know, you know, we all know what the numbers are, and that can get, you know, placed into the model as fact, yeah. Not just
conjecture.
Conjecture, yeah, exactly. But, you know, but it is collective bargaining, so, you know, we don't really know, or at least I can't speak. You know,
and I totally understand that. I guess I was just trying to get my arms around when we think we might be there, because it's really difficult to do a whole lot until we're there.
That's right. So,
questions for the TA or the superintendent, by anybody? Jamie,
last,
please,
thank
go ahead.
So, and anybody else, obviously, they can reach out to us. So finally, I put in a packet, you know, some materials, because, you know, not just starting the job formally a few weeks ago, but I feel obligated, certainly professionally, to make mention of this. I happened to be with a colleague last week. And if you notice in there's a bunch of sheets that are random. But the town of Norwood, going based off what both the superintendent and I just talked about, in addition to the S&P bond rating document that I referenced a couple times, and their analysis of our fiscal position, I know some in this room and others have certainly talked internally, you know, amongst, I think, our professional and volunteer circles about the O-word and override. And I don't think it's been a hidden secret. We certainly talked about it publicly. But, you know, I just want to caution folks a little bit. You know, by this time next year, I think it's incumbent upon all of us and many of you to ask yourselves, where do we want to be a year from now? And a year goes by quickly. Sometimes it doesn't feel the way, sometimes it does. But I happened to notice in the newspaper, the town of Norwood passed an override a couple weeks ago. And it was for $5.9 million. And they had an issue with their school district, so a majority of it was certainly dedicated to school programs. The goal of this packet is not to weed through numbers and who got what and what they're prioritized. You know, it's not really, the goal isn't the substance necessarily. But the top sheet I left here for a reason. The town of Norwood had a successful override of $5.9 million. And if you notice on there, it passed 3-1. If folks remember, in 2018, only a quarter of the overrides in Massachusetts were successful. That's a really low percentage. And I think what we've been seeing from the municipal association is that overrides are really becoming very difficult to get through. And in today's media world, I don't think just social media, I think it's becoming even ever more difficult to come up with a message and a purpose and deal with the white noise that's online quite a bit. I was pretty stunned at 3-1, that's a high margin. You can't get 75% of the public to agree on almost anything, let alone something like this. And I just thought this was an amazing case study. And so what I did is I went onto the town of Norwood's website and I printed out a bunch of materials that y'all can take a peek through on your own time. But you know, for many of you who volunteer and are some of the residents that are here in the back, you know, I think, or maybe resident. Steve, you're a resident, right?
Yes.
You know, I would encourage, or not necessarily encourage, but maybe ask, or for the folks that have been asking me about this, you know, you may want to take a look and do some research with the town of Norwood and see what they did. They had merchandise, sweatshirts, hats. They had running shirts for both in female and male to go out and do exercise. I mean, they had yoga pants. I mean, they had a lot of stuff. And if you look at a lot of the information, it's one Norwood. Yes for our schools, yes for our town. And that kind of struck me when I saw it, because I remember a lot of the counselors and a lot of the school committee. I know Dr. Bergen can say it's all the time. You know, everybody here is supportive of everybody's, you know, for lack of a better word, side. And I just thought,
group.
I just thought I'd throw it out there for those inquiring minds. This was just a couple weeks ago. They had YouTube videos, they had signs, they had the whole thing. I just peeked at it really quick from some of the stuff that was on the NorwoodNA.gov. And then there was a link to the, or whatever, to the One Norwood website. And so, you know, I guess part of it is basically to cut to the chase. You know, folks are interested in changing the trajectory of this, the red on here. Not just for next year, but structurally for at least the next several. As far out, I think, as the school administration and the town administration can predict, factors that are within our control, I can't control a lot of others, this might be something to look at. You know, this was really, as I was looking on the town website, it kind of gave me chills in a way, because it was really more about community pride than it was about an override. And, you know, I've said this a million times from Sunday, since I've gotten Franklin, I'm like really, truly amazed and floored at how much people really enjoy living here. And I think I have not met almost, I can't even really say a citizen. I'm sure somebody grumbled someday, but I can't recall a moment where a citizen was unhappy with the general service level that the town of Franklin provides, both at the school, certainly at the school level, and certainly on our level. You know, you look at a lot of the other communities many of us have worked in or worked for. You know, there's ideological battles, there's political battle, there's all this, but you don't really feel that here. So I saw this Norwood example, and I really kind of jumped out at me as something that really seemed very similar to what all of you have been talking about. So, you know, there's a whole big packet. I didn't print this out. This is the technical stuff you do for, you know, this is on the Town of Norwood's website. It's all public record. You know, I didn't print out everything for everybody because I felt like this is all just budget related stuff that doesn't relate to Franklin. But, you know, I guess if folks want to change those red numbers on there, you know, this might be something to consider moving forward. And I think that, as I pointed out a minute ago, you know, a year from now, we'll be having the same meeting with the same group. I mean, sure, we'll meet beforehand as well, but when we get to June 2020, and this group is meeting here, you know, I guess it's a question for all of you. Try to project forward a year. Where do you want to be? I think both the superintendent, Miriam, myself, Chris, we can give you the facts and the numbers. We are completely handcuffed by state law, as we should be, to be able to do advocacy, promotions, all of that stuff. But that really comes down to some of you that are in this room, as well as the community at large, to have that discussion about what level of pride we have in Franklin and all that other stuff that we can probably talk about tomorrow. So, folks have questions, I'm happy to answer them, but thought I'd throw that out there for folks who may be looking for that.
So Tom first, and I have something.
Again, ultimately, this is decision for the citizens of Franklin. They're the ones that are gonna make the final decision. And it should be their decision, or our decision, being a citizen. But I look at our job as providing those citizens with as much good information as we can possibly get them, so they have the ability to make an educated decision on whether they want an override. So if we're sitting here talking about this a year from now, we haven't done our job. We need to start that now, getting the information out. And it appears like, and Jamie had told me about Norwood, so I did a little investigating myself, and it looked like they really had a strong grassroots group that was made up of both people from the schools as well as people from the town. Helping to get that information out there. If we think it's gonna happen by talking about it at a council meeting, or talking about it at a school committee meeting, or talk about it at a finance committee meeting, it isn't gonna happen. Because, sure, there's 200 people that watch it, but that's about it. So we need to get the information out so that the taxpayers can make an educated decision. And it's not, I look at today as being not too early to get that information, but to get good information out there, which is part of what reason I asked the question earlier about when we thought we might have the collective bargaining stuff done, because then I think it gives us a better idea as to where we are. But we should be prepared to start getting the good information out this fall at the very latest, my opinion.
Before I call on Debbie, and I know we talked about this before, we talked about this education months ago, about how people need to be educated, but I know a question that's gonna come up as I look at these numbers is, and maybe a short version if you could, without trying, I can't copy too sure. much, right? Here we are going along all these years, right? This year we had some significant issues, and with some incredible partnership, we're able to put this, bring a budget together, okay? But it wasn't without a lot of hard work on the group, and in particular, is the schools worked really hard to bring these numbers in line to do what we did this year. And people that all of us that know, we really know how hard that was to do, and they did it with some sacrifice, but it was done. So now we're looking at $4.3 million next year projected, an additional 1.2 the following year, 1.45 the year after that, 1.9 the year after that. So I think that in the informed decision making that people are gonna do by getting educated properly, I think we need to be able to explain to them why all of a sudden, here, I'm looking at this, I see red now for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. And there was significant red this year, by the way. And I don't think that should get lost anywhere. People need to understand the sacrifice that was made this year. So this is not next year. This is what's happened already. We just went past it. We just grinned and bared it and came up with an incredible solution. So we've got red this past year, right, this year. Red, 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 red. So how do we explain to the taxpayers why all of a sudden, so that, I don't know, maybe we should just blame the town council. I think it's our, I think that's what we should do. I think it's the town council's fault. It should be our responsibility. But I think, and I say that, obviously I'm kidding, but we need to properly inform people why these numbers are where they're at. Because other than that, it's gonna be the sky is falling, and we're not gonna get any traction on this. So I think that's part of the informational process. I'm a fact person, so I can get as many facts as I can. And Tom drilled down on it, that's based on his experience of doing what he's been doing for years. This is gonna be part of the educational piece. Why are these numbers where they're at? Why do they keep going up? And we know, and maybe we need to educate people about OPEB, the benefits, the things that keep going up that we can't, the health insurance piece. you know, just the regular COLA increases. So if you put a couple, three of those together, guess what? And we take the 2.5 piece plus other income, that's where it starts. And I think we need to explain that to people. Because if that's not explained to me, I'm not voting for the Wolf, right? You know, and I'm on the council, right? So, but I mean, I know what we're dealing with. So if I take it just what we're dealing with now, I know that we need some relief. We needed relief last year, and there was significant sacrifice and compromise in working in the budget. So we're in the red. It's not like we're going to be in the red. We've been in the red. And this is one of the next 5 years that we see these numbers. And I know there's some wiggle room, right? I know that we're still shaking the numbers out, but we need to be prepared to explain that.
I mean, in a nutshell, to your question about asking in short, I said it in the Metro West Daily News article a few weeks ago, and I said it in my fiscal forecast, which is one of the reasons why I updated. The simple reality is the cost of doing business is far exceeding our legal ability to raise revenue. And
that's what we should
know,
start with.
And it's construction costs, it's staff costs, it's staff retention, it's health insurance, like you just pointed out, it's future obligations, it's capital. I mean, it's hard to hire people sometimes at the salaries that we have budgeted for things. It's hard to retain people at the salaries. A lot of it's just a product of the mechanics of the legal structure, at the way you run a business that we do, and the way that you are able to raise revenue. I can't almost pour it out anymore at the legislative delegation. I'm not blaming anyone. It's just a simple reality. They never give us the ability to do this stuff. I can't understand why. It's extraordinarily frustrating. It's like I said at the budget hearing, and with all due respect to them, it's stared faces, it is the way it is. I mean, to Tom's point a minute ago, it's the citizen decision to go over 2.5. That's been in law for 40 years. And that's just the way, that's just the situation in terms of the ability to raise revenue. I think the town has obviously done an excellent job for decades managing the money, cutting where and reallocating money where it's not needed into places where it is. We do a lot of great sound business practices, but the cost of doing business is just far exceeding our ability to raise money if you're to do it in a nutshell. And there's probably a dozen, maybe more factors. I'm sure the schools have reasons why it's the same thing, but I also want to point out, and I know this is volatile, but the reality is that we would be delaying this another year or two if you did not have 1.1 million more money deducted because of the charter school assessment. That is not, for the record, blaming the charter school. That is blaming the state formula. It has nothing to do with the charter school parents. But if I were to go ask the charter school if you could take a cut of 1.1 million, they would say no. If you asked any school district, any organization, any business, big Y. 1.1 million is 1.1 million. I mean, the reality is the reductions that were made in either roads or in school services, a lot of those may not have happened with the 1.1 million. And so that, I think, has helped expedite this issue a year or two. To your point, Councilor Brulo, that last year we were in this, and the year before we were kind of riding the wave a little bit, and that's kind of why it's setting in at this level. And these expectations, this model predicts out, the likelihood of having additional revenue taken out over the next several years.
So before I call the Debbie too, so I think our message should be the cost of doing business.
That's right.
I think that's how people need to be. I think that would be, because that's what it is. If our cost of doing business is X and our formula for raising is Y, that's where we are. I think another piece that would be really helpful for us is, my guess is other communities are in similar positions.
Absolutely.
So I think that this doesn't seem like an isolated incident with communities, that maybe they should have, it would be helpful to inform, our job would be better inform people about what other communities are facing at the same time. So that it would make it more, something I can get my hands around more.
And maybe for the residents might feel better that it's not just us, right? This isn't just Franklin.
And if someone else is having better luck at it than we are, then we'll figure out what it is and we'll do it, right? But my guess is that, like I said, people emulate Franklin for a reason. They emulate our government. They come here. They want to work here. We draw a lot of good people. Our police department has recently taken a lot of people from other communities to come here. A lot of people come here to work in other jobs in our community because it's our community. You know, some recent people. So I was fortunate enough to sit on the committee and look at a lot of qualified people. There's reasons why people want to be here. We're really good at what we do. And I think that that little piece would be helpful so they know about, first of all, the cost of doing business, right? So we are a business. I happen to be a pretty big business, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think that might be the lead. I think that would catch my attention. And we should talk about what other communities are doing just to see where we're at. I'm sorry, did you try?
No, that's okay. I have a couple of simple questions, I think. I'm curious to know how many voters are in the town of North.
That's an excellent question. And you know what? Your colleague over here asked me that. And as he was just speaking, I realized I did look it up in my directory, and I did have the answer. So the town of Norwood's a population of 30,000.
Yeah, but voters, I want to know.
It's 20.
So 20,000
yeah,
voters.
So we have more registered voters
than, right.
than, of course, we have a little bit more population.
Yeah.
Their budget is 120 million. So ours is 130. So, you know, it's pretty fairly comparable. Now, I will also mention, I just to be on record in case the chief of police is listening to this.
Taking my time.
Hold on. We have 27 square miles, Councilor Calabrese. They have 10.
Yeah.
So you will hear in the compare, I'm not trying to compare them, but that is a substantial difference when you talk about the geographical difference, even though the population and the money are the same.
But we're seeing that 75% of the voters came voted on this. Came out, voted on this override.
It was probably like maybe 40%.
Yeah, 37%.
75% here.
No, the 75% is the passing piece.
The passing ratio.
Yes.
75% voted yes over no.
Yeah.
75% of the 40.
3-1.
Yeah.
3-1.
Okay, 3-1 of what?
Of the people who came out.
Right.
It looks like only about 30% came out.
37%.
30% came out.
37.
Okay. Now we have to ask ourselves, why didn't these other people come out where this was such a great, we don't have an answer, but it's such a big question. And they worked very, very hard. You know, looking through this and seeing all that they did and all that they spent and all, and still to only get 37% out. So that's telling us that we have to work a hell of a lot.
We only get 45.
That's right.
We only get 45.
They didn't get that right of turnout. Steve can tell you what
the voter turnout is. 37%.
It's a shame when we have to say 37 is
right. See Sherlock and then we'll.
Yeah, two quick points. The 37% compared to our normal overrides at 45%, that's not that far off. According to the date, it was June 3rd. If I recall, that was a Monday. So the election, Norwood election was on a Monday, right? Day of the week is going to be a factor, right? But that was the other piece I wanted to get to, certainly increasing expenses. Great argument. How we're in comparison, and Norwood is an example, great argument, but don't sell yourself short because of your fiscal policies. You're forgetting that, if I recall correctly, school committee adjusted 3 years in a row by using your revolving funds to avoid going into a deficit, and then you had your own debt stabilization that you used for 2 years, the last 2 years. So to your point, Mr. Chair, it, all of a sudden, it shows negative, but we had taken mitigations because we had done prior planning. We've been passing it along and avoiding the issue. Now, we can't avoid it anymore. That needs to be a key piece of the story, mm-hmm. because that's your planning. Because if you remember, there was no planning. We did not have a long-term plan, a five-year plan. After the first override, and that's why we failed the second and third override. It took the long-term plan, which now, to the administration's credit and your credit, has been updated every single year. That argument we should be able to take off the table this time around, right? So we've got the long-term planning. We have, in fact, been doing the fiscal policies. We have, in fact, been saving monies, as also adjudicated by the auditors coming in saying yes, yes, yes. right? So we are, there's no fat here. We all know that.
Very good. Good point.
Here.
Yes, it is. Here, then here, then here.
Okay. Just a couple of points that I've noticed. I think one of the key things in the NOAA thing is they reserve $700,000 of the override for future. I don't know whether that's yearly or it's like a $700,000 override stabilization account.
I believe it's yearly.
So they're going to put away $700,000 a year of the override for future things. Point one. Point two, Hopedale just did an override. I think it was a whopping $489,000. But when you compare the size of Hopedale right. to here, both geographically, they're 5 square miles. And I don't know what their budget is, but that passed pretty well. Now, a bit of a Debbie Downer, if you will. Yeah. The people you got to convince in this community is me, is Debbie, Tom, whoever. Those of us who have been around, I'm a lifelong resident, lived in 3 houses, Marvin Avenue, Bond Street, now Sherman Avenue. And if, from my perspective, okay, and people my age perspective, let's face it, they're the ones that vote. Reality. Let's look around the schools. The things they're going to say. The schools, the enrollment's been declining 15 or 20%. Now, we know why you've been able to keep up and not, but the reality is, well, you've got 20% less kids. What do you mean you need more money? Class sizes. I think when Debbie and I were in the Ray School together, it was probably. And when I was at Marion. When I was at Marion High School, you go into a classroom and there were 5 rows across and 8 deep. That's 40 kids. 40 kids. We now go into a panic mode when we get to 24, 22, 25. That's just, I mean, you gotta think of the mentality that people are gonna vote. I heard a lot about we need counseling, and I agree. I have a niece who's desperately in need of it right now. She's in college, and now she's not because of the issues. But my mother would say, go put on your big boy pants and get on with it. And that's the way they think now. Remember that. The question I would have if I had kids in the school, they pay a lot of fees. Are we, in terms of the override, will the fees go away? Will they go down? Or will they stay? That's cash out of their pockets over and above whatever they pay. Public safety. We just said, made the point, we just added, I think, 7 officers or 6, 5. Ooh, where'd that money come from?
We cut the budget.
Yeah, for less money. We all know where it came from. Spectacular planning by the chief, but the perception is, hey, you added 5 guys. We got 20 cruisers sitting in the road and behind the station up there. Where'd all that money come from? The fire department, desperately underbalanced. People, when they call, they get an ambulance. They don't necessarily notice that the patch on the guy's shoulder says Norfolk or Bellingham or Medway, right? That they say, well, you've got plenty of guys, what do you need? You know, they don't realize that it's coming from somewhere else, probably 20% of the time these days, based on my listening. Talk about infrastructure. They look around, we have $11 million addition to the library, or 11 million plus. How much should we pay for the senior center? 10 million? Nice brand new building there. Relatively brand new fire stations. A police station that's unfortunately in a swamp, but that's another story.
Town pool, yeah.
Roll over. We talk about roads. Hey guys, if you ride out around Franklin right now, every road in the world is dug up being fixed. All down through Skyline, my own street, Sherman Avenue, is going to get dug up shortly. We've done all of downtown. I think the state is about to do 140 down, at least for the markings on the road. This is what the people that are my age look at and say, you guys are nuts. You don't need any more money. So I don't know how we address that. That's the group, 50 and up, they're gonna vote. Every one of them, probably, or a good chunk of them.
That's part of the education, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know how we do that, but.
Yeah, I know, not easy.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just fine with, that's exactly it. That's a big piece of what we're trying to do, is the whole education piece, because there's so many misconceptions. Anyone who saw the front page of the Boston Globe today, the suicide rate of young people and the depression, all the mental health issues now, and those 24 kids sitting in those classes, and that's the part about education. It's a long way from the kids we educate in public schools today, and that's gonna be a big piece of it. But when you listen to, as we did at the joint PCCs the other day, one of the things they say is you've got to tell the people they always find the money. So one of the things we've started is sort of a campaign, and we started the Strawberry Stroll on Friday to get as much information out, following up on what you said, is this whole piece of it. No, we don't always find the money. And what we did is put a list to show we haven't always found the money. And to quote, what we did is quote from the fiscal forecast about, you know, meeting the needs, and then we said, no, we couldn't find the money to keep Spanish in the elementary schools, world languages in the sixth grade, French and Latin in our middle schools, music education in our middle schools, the elementary band strings program, librarians, all of them gone except at the high school, aides in every kindergarten classroom. And then we couldn't find the money to prevent having to put fees on transportation, and we couldn't find the money to meet the critical needs, and we couldn't control, and then we put all the outside factors, you know, all those new initiatives that are being thrown at us, the cost of tuition for these out-of-district placements for special needs kids that never existed. And the public needs to know what we pay every single month to send these kids to, I don't know how many, just because it's our sacred obligation to meet the needs of all those kids. And then we said, you know, the cost of transportation for special needs kids, none of it reimbursed. The cost of, you know, rising technology, health insurance. And then we took the quote right from Jeff Nutting and Jamie's report. $37 million to the charter school since fiscal 09. And not their fault. We're not saying this is the current reimbursement formula. And to say that if we don't address the fact that we always find the money, you know, just to keep saying we want to keep the schools as strong as we possibly can, we're not calling, saying the sky is falling, but for anyone to think that we haven't been suffering with this and doing everything we can to do all that we can to maintain the level of services. But to George's point, we've got to darn well start educating, and that's why, and we've been saying in one voice, and we had talked last year about a forum, and we have a kickoff forum or something where we're all together and we get this information out and we challenge every single thing that's out there that we need to challenge, especially they always find, no, we don't, right? And that's the part. We've started the kickoff there. We're gonna be at the farmer's market over the, several times over the summer. We're gonna be at every curriculum net. We're gonna be everywhere where there are families to start getting this information out and to say, you know, we need you on board and we're part of this big community and we love it and we're gonna do everything we can for your kids. But we need you to support it, you know, and it's going to be your decision, but with as much information, so. Yeah. But everything you said, you know, it's right. But if they think, you know, we always find the money.
I can assure you, I just cleaned out Mr. Nutting's desk. There are no bags of money. Because I've had that said to me many, many times before. Where's Nutting hiding the money? There's no money in his office.
Come back in there, clean it up.
Swept it all out. There is nothing in there but some paper clips.
So, you know, and that's another, is another headline, right? Don't punish us for finding the money in the past,
yeah,
right? Or don't punish us for finding the money. And just one quick comment before I call on you is that I had a judge friend of mine tell me once, he said, every young child should have a counselor, right? You know, so that they can talk through issues as they grow, because the cost to society that we'll save will be immeasurable. So the kids in school, you know, my kids are all raised now, but that piece, the social emotional piece, is, it sounds, I guess you gotta get your head around what it means, and it maybe means different things to different people, but to have a proper counseling program in place when kids have issues, because sometimes we as parents don't have the tools.
Absolutely.
My training doesn't train me for all the tools, and I tell my wife all the time, I say, this wasn't in the book, honey, you know? Because we have three kids, and they're all different. I go, I can't find it, you know? And she's smarter than I am, so, but we're not uneducated.
Yeah.
And these things come up and you go, what do I do now? And I think, how did my parents do it? And it really impresses me
how good, my mom was eighth grade, my dad was ninth grade, right? And didn't finish. Mm-hmm. But that's how good they were, yeah. You know, at doing things. So, but I don't know that we have the all, I'm not an all-star like that. So I need the help. And I think that we need professionals to get ahead of these things, because the cost to, if I have an issue with my, and we all have issues, right? I have three kids. That means, guess what? We're gonna have an issue here or there, right? It's the statistically and empirically, it's gonna be an issue. So when those things come up, isn't it nice to have a trained professional say, you know what, Mr. Padula, you might wanna think about this issue. And of course, you know, I'm not gonna wanna think about it, but all of a sudden he starts going and we say, you know what, yeah, that's right. So, because they can't learn. If we can't keep them happy and balanced, they're not gonna learn.
Well, that's it.
Right? And we want them to be good members of society, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll be better. So the cost of all the things that they won't do, there'll be clients that I'll never see, right? Because they're not gonna get in trouble. So it will, from a societal standpoint, it's astronomical. They'll be healthier, they won't be getting.
And that's what we need to capture, to George's point, to make sure that we all are understanding that. I mean, those of us in the weeds understand it, but that's part
they
of
don't.
The narrative that really needs to get out there.
They don't,
you
but
said
that.
It really well, Peter.
Well, you know why? Because it makes sense, and sometimes people need to hear
that.
It does
make sense.
You know, and we don't have to all be in the, you know, on the same, I don't know, wear the same jerseys, but, you know, we know. We are on the same team, I think, when it comes to that. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so I wish that we have really jumped on this 6 months ago, honestly. We've been talking about this for a while, so
right.
Yes, Tom, now,
right?
Right? I am 100% for it now. I wish we were doing this 9 months ago, but now is when we gotta start now. Couple of thoughts. I was extremely impressed. How many years ago, Tom, I'm gonna ask you, did we start the campaign for the high school?
2008.
Wow. Okay.
2008.
I'm losing track of time.
But opened the doors in what, 15?
Yeah. 14. But the
14.
Effort.
14.
The effort put behind that to get the message out was very, very well done. I mean, and I'm sure it wasn't easy. I didn't participate in it. But I 100% supported it.
For a long time.
It was huge.
I went to every single neighborhood in the town of Franklin.
It was huge. So, and I don't know, Deb, if you remember what the voter turnout was for that election to vote for the debt exclusion for the high school.
Remember?
I don't remember exactly.
Very high, though.
It was very high.
Yes. Significant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So back to you, George, to your point, if we look at the normal turnout of voters, it's not, I vote personally, but it's not my peers. It's not the parents in the school. I wish it was. And I think those are the people, now I'm looking around the room, Denise, who else has kids in the school besides me and Denise? I know Chrissy does too, because I know Chrissy.
A lot of pressure, Chrissy.
So, you know, these are the people we have to start talking to. I'm at work 50 hours a week.
Right.
I can't get to all the meetings I want to be to, honestly. I want to be to more of these, and I can't. I have to get to my people and say, time, guys, to pay attention and join the school committee in their message. And start to get some of the community involved in your message. I love what you guys are doing.
Right, and I think that's
good. It's great. And you need two people, 10 people, 20 people, 50 people can't do it. You need a huge group of people that are willing to give of their time to get out there with the message. And they have to be able to sell that message.
Absolutely. We all have to kind of be on script. Is not really, yes it is. You know, we all have to be on script.
Yeah.
We all have to
have
the same information.
Question. We had a script for the high school.
Yeah.
Maureen and I were going out every night of the week. We were out somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes together, sometimes separately. And we had a script and we just followed the script.
Right. And the more people we can get on that team, the better. So I asked Tom, how did it start? How did it start? Who really picks it up and starts getting together the masses?
Started it. Maureen started it, obviously, coming from the school side. I got on board very early, and between the two of us, we just started pulling people in. And there was a strong group, PCCs. I mean, they're a godsend if you can corral. And they can be a big help. But it's not only school people that we need in this group. We need some of the town people, some of us.
Yeah.
And I mean, not council me, but citizen me.
Right.
We need some of those people out there sending that same message with the same script. And just as much as the script that the school is talking about, they need the town part of that script as well. And they need to be talking not only just about the school issues, but they need to be able to answer and talk about the town's issues as well. And the same, it's the only way it works. One message, one voice to the community, everybody saying the same, preaching the same message.
So I'm frustrated because for 18 months now we've been having a very, 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 very similar conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's these really scary, horrific red numbers on fiscal years out. And I feel like, what's the point? Like, you know, to Sue's point, like, when does it start? Do I show up at the next town council meeting and go to the microphone as a citizen and say, I'd like to introduce them, like, tell me what
That's kind of what I was trying to get to earlier by
Come
trying to get
Let's
that
go.
Number.
I'm trying to say, we can't do this all legally.
Right,
you need to do it.
And I'm being fresh,
but you need to go talk to people out there. These guys know. You guys know. It's not about them. You need to pound the room and fill the chamber downstairs with people who are pounding at us, telling us we need to make sure that we preserve the roads, we preserve the counselors, we preserve all the other stuff that we know are in this budget. I think it's an inside baseball. It's an inside baseball conversation. This what we're talking about right now.
So
there's nobody here. I have not had a budget hearing in the years I have been here. I literally have asked the police chief in the fall. I'm dead serious. I know this is going to come across as funny. I asked him, can I borrow Ben Franklin, the dog, to try to get more people out to the budget hearings? Because he is the only draw.
That's right. Nobody comes.
Like,
nobody
I'm dead comes. Serious. Like, come talk to Ben about the budget. Because people, it's about out there. It's about the citizens. When I was at Dacey Field after the Pollinator Pastures event that Melanie had last week, I walked through Dacey Field and I was walking all the youth sports games and I was saying to myself, and I sat there for a while at each field and I went, none of these people have any clue what's happening. None of them. They're just playing ball, the kids are having fun, they're on great fields to George's point, and none of these parents have any clue what's coming down the pike. That's what it's about.
Yep.
It's not about them. I'm sorry to say that. I know that they're the ones that have to raise their hands and put an override on the ballot or deal with this.
If we did
it's
that,
about
wouldn't it make them wake up? I mean, we studied start times for 15 months. Nobody thought about it until we put it on an agenda.
Because it impacted them.
Right. So
and they all of a sudden woke up and said, wait a minute, you know, I got to pay attention. So the question is like Norwood, or like these other communities that I'll be happy to research and get the facts, how do you make them pay attention without going into the red for 2 years, cutting things, closing schools, not fixing roads? You know, we have to get ahead of this, to Sue's point. And I'm sorry to be, you know, overly emotional. It's not about this room. There's 35,000 people in this town, and as I walk through DC Field, and as I walk through all sorts of places in the community, no one has a clue. And it's like I said in the newspaper a few weeks ago. I think it is an odd thing for a lot of people who, in a great economy right now, are doing well. Most folks are, you know, They're going on an extra vacation. They're having a car. They're making an improvement to their house, whatever it is, and they're in their world. And I think that they don't know what necessarily is coming down the pike. And so I think we can
we can go ahead and go to every school committee member, as Councilor Mercer just said a minute ago. It's got to start out there in the neighborhoods. And I think in the case of today, where you have a big difference from 2008, the iPhone was 1 year old then. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, people are in their own space, and they're not necessarily connected to fully what we're doing.
How many people, Jamie, does it take to get a ballot question to say, we need a certain amount of money? How many people, how do we, and then we go educate the people about why we need it. Don't we need to start?
How do we start that process?
Yeah, it's just to say, we, you know, figure it out and then go out and then, like Tommy said, you go to every single house in the, and you tell them why you need it. I don't know how you get it started.
You're in the list, okay?
Oh, sorry, did I cut someone?
Well, I think the first, one of the first things, if not the first thing we need to do, is we need to get the message. We don't have the message written down
yet. Agreed.
So we don't know what to go out and say.
Right, you need a number. What's the target?
So we need the administration, the town administration, to put a message together. We need the, and I know you have a big part of it done.
We've been doing that for a while, yeah.
And you have this school message. Now we take the school message, we take the town message, we put it together, we all talk about it, make sure that we all understand all of the points, then we can start selling it and going out. And I don't mind going to neighborhoods.
Do we do that this summer? Do we sit down and put
Absolutely.
Do we get a script going?
That's
what I'm saying.
I want you tomorrow.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm going to call on you, and then we'll come back over
here. Go ahead. Just public comment. There are already groups forming around this education question. We're resurrecting the old Invest in Franklin group, and then also we're dusting off the old routine that we use for the Franklin High School neighborhood captains. Similar ideas to the way the FHS program worked. So there are folks that are coalescing around all this to get this started this summer.
Hold them all together.
Right.
We need to do it together.
Well, exactly. Together. And I applaud the efforts, and I think it's great. Those are the kind of people we need. But we need to get the message done so that they're selling the right message.
Yeah, because the high school
and
message
it's not
is
just
awesome.
So that's what I'm saying.
Exactly. And once it starts, once one neighborhood hears that Ann had a neighborhood meeting, there were 30 people there, and they came and talked about why we're in the financial situation we're in, then all of a sudden, oh, Sue's neighborhood, they want to hear. So then you're out there. That's how it all started. Started with one neighborhood, and then it grew and grew and grew. And we used the PCCs to kind of get into the different neighborhoods because they were easy targets to talk to about hosting a neighborhood
and
meeting.
And they were already connected.
And they were already connected, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have a crazy question, but Norwood had a specific number on what they were going to do with
yeah.
that. Do we have yet even the MBO the schools will of if we do I'm guessing we're in the $6 to $7 million override or thereabouts. I don't know. That's a question.
Six.
How much are
I
we
mean,
going
to
ask?
Numbers, I mean, they're not close enough to be a good firm number.
We could work that up. That's part of the message.
But that's important. I mean,
it is. But
you know, we don't want to ask for.
Right.
For too little, and then have to do it again in 3 years. We want to make sure we solve the problem this time for they projected 5 years.
Right.
Maybe that's a good time, I don't know.
That was the point of the fall, and talking to Jamie about having the number. But that doesn't mean we can't put the message together now, and that number is blank. Until the fall comes, you plug in the number
and
you
go. Right.
And the answer will be how much you need. The answer will be we're still working on that number. But how about this, to Jamie, if you could? So, if some of the money's coming from the state, it's not guaranteed. How is it that I put a number on something like this, right? And all of a sudden the state cuts it more.
Right.
Where does that leave us? Say for like Chapter 7.
Well, if you're down 600,000, say, then you know we have to get to November. Remember, the whole fiscal year keeps on going on, right? The Senate, the state budget is even done. The governor does his budget vetoes in the middle of July, and then the Senate and House maybe overrides all those things. It could go all the way till September. We look at our new growth all the way through generally the end of September, and we set the tax rate. That's really the moment that you're going to know for sure what the budget is in final after all of those other considerations are done, is when you set the tax rate before Thanksgiving.
So if Chapter 70 goes down, say we do a three-year plan or a five-year plan, but Chapter 70 goes down on those years, the numbers that we put in aren't going to work.
They're not going to work, but you have to. That's why you have to take it year by year and look at it. And I think in terms of the question of what are you going to spend the money on, I mean, that's a question probably more appropriate until at least the legislators get the budget done. And then you look at September, collective bargaining's done, you know, you can get at least an early health insurance number and look at the lay of the land and some other factors. You can be a little settled on a number. It's very easy to do what Norwood did, to cut out a pie chart and say, I'm making these up, I'm not proposing this. You know, 10-20% is for debt service for facilities, you know, 5% is for roads, you know, and then you look at the ratio of the school budget to town budget, it's about 60 to 40. So you say in operational expenses, the school gets 60, the town gets 40. What do those numbers look like? And what are those numbers, what do those go to? And then I think like Norwood, you say, come the fall, here are the cuts. I don't remember where I put it, but the, you know, they have a list in here that's pretty straightforward. And I think you're right. I think you put out what's on the chopping block. And you make what's already been chopped.
Nice
you know,
bullets
on my
side. And what's next?
I can't
commit to anything, obviously. But obviously, all of our staff are unbelievable. And I have no doubt that people have in their mind a plan B, C, D, and E of what where you would maneuver some of those numbers. I mean, it's just the way I think. But you know, I would never get ahead of myself, but I think clearly, I mean, the roads money, we got the library up to a certain point, we'd be cutting expenses. I mean, you know, on a variety of projects that we have going, I mean, I think we all are in the game to try to not get to the personnel, you know, portion of things. But I think you have to let people know, like Norwood did, what's the value you're selling this for? I think it'd be premature to do that now, but I think that's why I'm handing out these materials. I think to Kit's point in the back a few minutes ago, the summer's for the organizing, getting some people together. To Tom's point a minute ago, who's your communications captain? Right. Who's your precinct captain?
We gotta get the script first, don't we?
What?
I mean, don't we
well,
have to?
Well,
I mean,
we don't need the hand. Find the people.
You
can
find the people. There's plenty of people in this community.
No, I understand, but to get the people, we need to say, this is why you need to, because here's the reason. If we don't, we can't get the people unless we need the
right
town way.
Number.
We
need
four.
Yeah.
The red on this sheet at a minimum, and the fiscal forecast. I can't make it any more clear.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I know it's not a succinct message. I get it's not we are Franklin. I get it's not the cost of doing business, Farsi. I know that message is there, but really, you know, you have surrogates throughout this community that want this. It's about getting them together, organizing them a bit. How many people do you have? Do you have 20 people working for you? Do you have 100? Do you have two? You know, I mean, and I think if you get to September and October and you're at the beginning of an election and you have a tax rate hearing coming after that, I think if you wait to get that crowd together, you're only that much further behind than when you actually know what the numbers are and when we have the opportunity for a few months to build out the model based on some better facts about what are we looking at in terms of cutting out of this model.
I think the number will have to come when it comes, which may be in September.
Yeah.
But I think the message, I think you're right, I think the message has to be crystallized.
That's
you know
how you get
is.
The people.
Then you have
the message will bring your
about.
People to start working, but they have to see it all laid out, you know, say this is what we stand to lose, this is all these things. Then we get the people and we do it, like you said, over the summer.
I think that I feel bad that we haven't had a meeting before now. I know this is about when we scheduled it. I think that we probably should be scheduling another meeting.
I think so.
And I wouldn't wait until September.
No.
I think that we lose all our good ideas people have. So I think we can probably put it through you, schedule something again. And I think a short window is time. I don't know, a 4-week window, 6-week window. maybe your...
Sure, in summer. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't care if it's July 3rd. I mean, if we're gonna do it, we're gonna put the time into it. Let's schedule it and do it. And in the meantime, start trying to get together and get a message together, even if it's apart from two or three different places.
Exactly.
Let's get that together, get it on one sheet, let's tweak it, bang it around a little bit, come up with a message, and then we have something to work with. Then people, because this is all about educating people, you know. Give them the facts. The bullet points are given up already, some facts about what we've done already, how we were so good at what we do that this has been put off.
Then
so,
the people have something that we gather together, have something to go out and share, but without that,
concrete, factual information. Well, it's been like this, because that's why I asked the question. Look at all this red. Well, it's because we've been doing so good over the last several years. But the way the numbers are, the way this cost of doing business is, the model will not sustain itself. And I think that's part of the message.
Yeah, that is definitely the message.
One last quick point, if I may. Second paragraph, boldface print, and the fiscal forecast. The takeaway message from all reports is that Franklin will continue to struggle to maintain high-quality school municipal services given the fiscal constraints that we operate under. I know that's longer than the elevator pitch we all want. I totally respect that. At this point, that's your message.
Which is the same thing. And you can do a business doesn't sustain the model.
And that's
right?
The next bold-faced bullet point right after Council Bill. So I just can't emphasize enough the message thus far right now without a specific what's going to get cut, what's not going to get cut, what's the override number, what's not, you know, those things have to wait and you can't get too far ahead of it. But the message is right there. And that should not limit anyone to going out to trying to get people interested in participating in some sort of activity to drive this policy question that's going to come up really fast.
But if they think it's just the schools though, if they don't see that there's a message that goes out there that says this is impacting the roads and the libraries and the fence clear to
takeaway message from all reports is that the Franklin contain the struggle to maintain high quality school and municipal services given the right at the bottom of it. We know that population is increased, health, pension, insurance are a concern, OPEB liability $74 million.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying that there's enough here to get people working on this and to get an organization and a framework.
Yeah.
And then at least you got the truth so that when you come in the fall and we have better numbers, at least based on the state budget and the all that stuff, we can start to work on a pie chart, which other communities do, and say, okay, here's the delta. Here's what you lose, here's what you gain, here's what you already lost, here's what you can get back.
Yeah.
And then I think you're right about, I know that's the message people want, and we just can't do that right now, but that should not prohibit people from going out and trying to get people engaged to be a part of your team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a great starting point to take a look at this, cut it up.
Yep. You can take
change it up, add a few things, take a few things out, send it out to this group.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I think it's important to note that the from our elected delegation, Senator Spoka, Senator Rauch, and Representative Roy, they're in the State House, they're looking at revenues, but that's so far out. They're working on this fair share thing through the Constitutional Convention. That's 4 years away. There's a revenue subcommittee looking at other ways for revenues. It clearly they're punting and they're taking a much longer view. So I think part of our message needs to be that we as a community need to step up in this, interim.
That's
when Prop 2.5 has, sort of tied our hands so much and we don't have the ability. I mean, I think it's wrong-headed for the legislature to make every single town and municipality in the Commonwealth do this dance around overrides when they're so unsuccessful. It's not, equitable. It's right. We all know the issues with it. So the legislature's looking at it, but it's maybe 5 years out. Who knows when they're going to actually get to it. So I just think that it needs to be part of our narrative that they've kind of let this go too long, and this is what we're going to need to do in the short term. Hopefully we won't have to do it again. But.
Yes.
Quick update to answer Sue's question earlier. The high school override was a 48% turnout of the voters. And it's a general rule that I've used over my years reporting, 20%, give or take, for a town election, 40%, and it's usually 42, 44, but we've had 36, 38, for an override, 60% for a state election, governor. 80% for presidential election. Those have been the voter turnouts in the last 12 years. 20, 40, 60, 80 is kind of the general rule, but 48% specifically for the high school.
I'll call that 50.
Who's on the high end?
Yeah, that's great turnout.
It is a good turnout.
Because it was a phenomenal message, and it was well executed.
Is it going to be a special election, or is it going to be on the town election?
It wouldn't be.
You'd have to have the ballot question already in for the town election now.
Yeah, you couldn't do it.
Well, no, I think it's.
I don't think you could.
You have to have it go through the state, and then get it. You have to have the message from the town council into the state to be put on for the ballot. The timeline is too late, as I saw it. A May, June, you've got time, but not for November. May, June for next year, which would be giving you the money for the 21 budget. You can't wait till the year after. You got to do it in May, June. That's when the overrides generally go.
We can't do it September, October.
No.
I don't believe we have the time to do it.
I mean, you have to have a certain amount of days to, I think it's 30 days. You propose 45 to have people register to vote. You have to give them a window, you have to go get a ballot question approved. Like, there's a whole.
You don't have enough time to get the message out to a greater number of people to get that.
So you're thinking about a year campaign then?
I can almost guarantee you got 4,000 people that are going to vote no right now.
Yeah.
3,000. I mean, there's already people that'll just vote no because it's an override. I mean, it's just. It's just.
Regardless of how well you educate them.
Yeah.
But. We're not doing our job if we don't try.
Yeah.
That's right.
A 9-month campaign is better than trying to rush it.
Yeah.
Because then when if it goes down, then you're in a position of having to react to the voters that just voted it down, and then
I would think we could do it early spring. Would be the earliest.
And when are the revenues hit? What budget that would be for fiscal
21.
21.
21's budget.
Yeah. 21.
Still, it would be for 21's budget. Yeah. But I think, you know, my thought, and then again, that's just me. I mean, just one citizen or one vote on the council. I would think that would be when we would look to do it this spring.
May?
Yeah.
March, April.
Yeah, I would say March or April.
The process to then redo it seems a waste of a lot of people's time.
I mean, April. We've had many elections in April.
We used to always have our elections.
Yes, exactly. So I don't see that wouldn't be attainable if, in fact, the council votes to put the question out there.
But I just need some clarity. So April of
2020
would be in time to affect
the
2021. The budget that starts
in July.
In July.
Yep.
Okay.
That's just, I mean, at some point you basically develop two budgets, and that's where you get what you're looking for. That's the real, absolute, penny for penny, dollar for dollar. There's no more marketing materials from a citizens committee or something where you say round percentages, round number. You know, that's where you get into, you know, the actual budget, right? Where you're line item by line item, you say, here's what's going to go away and what's not coming back, or here's what you save. And then that's what people generally, I think, are mostly voting on. Mm-hmm.
Do we know how long the Norwood campaign, if you will, went on?
I did email the town manager there. He's a friend of mine. He's not gotten back to me yet to find out if there was a contact that I could share with folks. So if I find that, I'll pass it along. But I can't imagine, you know, I don't know how long they did the campaign. I didn't really look at it too fast. I just went to the town website.
The school, we were active. We were active for 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
Very active for 10 months.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, Jim, you look at a date coming up for us to get together at this group again, please. Thank you. And then any other questions or points anybody has? I think in the interim we could probably try to cobble together some kind of bullet points of what would be important for educating people.
Yeah, and bring it together.
Sure.
Right.
Questions? Any other questions or comments?
Would we still think of
doing sort of that forum we had talked about doing in the fall to bring everybody together?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that would be part of our planning.
That's just part of it.
Yeah, but I think we'll get the other stuff together first. Yeah, I think that we're going to lose momentum. I don't get that much, wish we could do it earlier, but I think we're going to get through our other budget issues and get all that stuff wrapped up. So, questions, comments?
Just in terms of planning, there is an ad hoc group that's looking to do kind of a town government 101 session in the fall. So if they get a date and I hear that, I'll throw that into the mix so we can schedule around it. Because clearly that's part of the education campaign. How does the government work? And this is going to be much more focused in terms of this is the budget that we need to look at. But we don't want to have them on the same date. That wouldn't help.
I think the, to Rand's point, I think the forum is really a great kickoff point, where we have all our core groups from the neighborhoods. We make sure that we
get that the auditorium. We get everyone we know in that auditorium, and that's what we get there.
And that's the charge. So I think we, and I would hope that July meeting, that we set a date
for
that.
Great.
For the fall.
Yeah.
For the fall.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Make that part of the agenda that night.
I don't mention that. We're at the other timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else? Is there any motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? In particular, if you have an interest in real estate, zoning, or construction, I'd like to get somebody to help us by following either the Planning Board, Zoning Board of Appeals, and/or the Conservation Committee meetings. I'll provide the guidance on note-taking and sharing. You need to bring an inquisitive, open mind and a willingness to learn and share. Overall, if you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, as always, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark in the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.